thinking about various applications. So we'll start out by thinking about some distance measures between quantum states, different ways of quantifying how far apart quantum states are. And in general, we'll be talking about quantum states that might be mixed. And you know, the sort of the theme here will be that we want to consider measures that have some kind of operational interpretation. So they, you know, this notion of distance is not just some mathematical thing, but it actually means something in terms of, you know, actions that you can do on states and how say how easy it is to tell things apart. And so I'll introduce these distance measures and talk about them a little bit. And then we'll also, the next sort of function of quantum states that we'll talk about will be entropy. We may not have time today to you know, finish the discussion of entropy, but that'll be the next thing that we'll be talking about, and that will lead into talking about the notion of quantum data compression. So thinking about you know, representing information in quantum states and trying to think about how compressible it is. Okay, so so first of all, let's start out thinking about these distance measures. So the idea is that we would like to have some way to quantify how far apart two quantum states are. So how far apart or how close are two quantum states? And you know, what we'd like to do is sort of think a bit more carefully about this question about what kind of measure we could choose, because there are many things we can choose, and you know, it's probably a good idea to, you know, if you're going to be using distance measures between quantum states a lot, you know, it's a good idea to maybe put some thought into what makes for a good measure and what should we actually use. So we've actually seen already, when we talked about the notion of universality of quantum circuits, we've seen one notion of the distance between quantum states that you might think about, which was, you know, we just considered the norm of the difference between two quantum states. So this was in the case of pure quantum states only that we made use of this definition. So you know, we consider just the norm of the difference between psi and phi, and you know, we thought about this in the context of the norm that it induces on unitary operations, which is that we could think about maximizing over input state psi, you know, u minus v psi. So this was a measure of the distance between unitary operations u and v. And whenever you have, I mean, I guess you probably know about, you know, vector norms and matrix norms in linear algebra and matrix theory. When you have norms on vectors, you can think about them as inducing norms on matrices, norms on operations in a way similar to this. And, you know, a similar thing can be done in general when you have some notion of distance between quantum states, that we can use it to come up with some kind of notion of a distance between operations. Okay, but for now, we're just going to focus on distances between states. And so we could think about, for example, this distance between quantum states, which is just the norm of the difference. So, you know, this kind of makes sense in the sense that if psi and phi are the same thing, then it's zero. And if psi and phi are more different, then it seems like it gets bigger. But there are some kind of funny things about a distance measure like this. So, for example, you can have two quantum states that are completely indistinguishable physically, yet the distance is maximal, right? Because, for example, if we considered, you know, phi to be the state minus psi, so just the same state but with a phase of minus 1, then we would have psi minus minus psi. Well, this is just twice the length of psi, so this is just 2 if psi is a normalized state. So that's kind of strange. We have two states which are completely indistinguishable from each other because they just differ by a global phase, but their distance is maximal. It's pretty easy to see that this is the biggest that this measure could ever be between two normalized states. So, you know, this seems like it could be maybe a problem. Maybe this isn't really the kind of measure that we want to use. Now, in the context of universality, this isn't really a problem because we could think about a universal set of gates that actually includes also the ability to generate an arbitrary global phase. And we may want to do that if we're thinking about implementing, say, controlled unitary operations, and that global phase is really potentially a relative phase. So, you know, for the application that we looked at before, maybe this property is okay, and maybe it's actually what we want. But if we're just thinking abstractly about, you know, we have some quantum states and we want to think about how far apart are they, this seems like a bad property to have. And maybe we should kind of take a step back and think about what would be a good measure. Okay, so that's by way of introduction. And so now let's start to talk about some of these specific measures. Okay, so what is the fidelity between quantum states? Well, the fidelity between quantum states for pure states is something which is very natural. It's just the magnitude of the inner product between the states. So for pure states, we could define the fidelity between psi and phi, which is just the magnitude of the inner product between psi and phi. Okay, so this is sometimes called the overlap. So when we think about this as a measure of the distance between between two states psi and phi, clearly it doesn't suffer from this problem, because if we multiply, if we multiply just one of the states by a global phase, that doesn't actually change the fidelity. So that seems like it's kind of a good thing. And moreover, we can actually think about this this fidelity as having some kind of an operational interpretation. So it tells us something about the probabilities that we would get certain measurement outcomes if we were to, we have some state psi, but then we measure in a basis that includes the state phi, or vice versa. So, if we measure the state, let's say we measure phi with the POVM that consists of, well, it's actually a projective measurement that just consists of the states, the projectors onto psi and the complement of psi, then, well, the probability that we get the outcome that says that we project onto psi is exactly the square of the fidelity between psi and phi. Right? So then the probability of the psi measurement outcome is exactly the fidelity of psi and phi squared. So, it says something about how likely we would get confused if, say, we were trying to measure whether the state was phi or something orthogonal to phi, but we actually measured in this other basis. So this describes how this quantity arises in terms of some kind of experiment that we could actually carry out. And this is the kind of motivation we might like to have for a notion of the distance between quantum states. Okay. So this is all well and good for pure states, and this idea of, thinking about how close two quantum states are in terms of this, this overlap psi phi that you can also think about geometrically, right? It's just like the cosine of the angle between these two states, psi and phi. It has this very nice picture for pure states. So for pure states, this is something which seems pretty well motivated. But we would also like to have notions of distance between quantum states in general, where we might be thinking about mixed states, right? So how could we come up with a notion of distance for mixed states? So a kind of an analog of this fidelity. Well, if one of the states is mixed, if you just think about kind of this motivation of what the what the fidelity means, it's pretty easy to generalize it to the case where say we have a state psi and then we have some other state phi, right? So so with one mixed state, kind of analogous quantity would be that we have, the square of the fidelity, say, between psi and some mixed quantum state rho would be like psi, rho, psi, right? This is kind of the analogous quantity if rho is actually a mixed state. But if we have two, this would be the same thing. That would be the probability that if we were measuring the state rho, we would get the outcome corresponding to projecting onto psi. So this has kind of the analogous interpretation. But in general, we might have two mixed states that we might want to compare. So what should we do in that case? So, well, I can just tell you what the, how people normally define, how the fidelity is actually defined, and it's going to seem very strange, but then we'll see that there's actually kind of a nice reason why the fidelity is defined in that way. So in general, we define the following thing. So the fidelity between mixed quantum states rho and sigma is the trace of an operator which is written as the absolute value of the square root of rho times the square root of sigma. Okay, so we have to unpack this a little bit to see what it even means. So first of all, what do I mean by the absolute value of an operator? So what I mean here is, let's say if I want to compute the absolute value of some operator A, I'm just going to define that to be the square root of A times A adjoint. Okay. So this is an operator whose, its eigenvalues are just the absolute values of the eigenvalues of A. And it's diagonal in the same basis as A. So this is an operator that it makes sense to think of as the absolute value of the operator A. Yes? It's a different operator. In general, but But it would also work in this definition. So you could also define it like this. I mean, so in general, like if you had a rectangular matrix, say, it wouldn't even be a matrix of the same size. But it's still going to have this property that the eigenvalues, you know, the eigenvalues of this matrix, so the square roots of the eigenvalues of this matrix A dagger A are exactly what are called the singular values of A. And they're going to be, they're going to have, you know, in the case where A is, say, a Hermitian matrix, as it will be in this application. I guess it won't be in general because we're multiplying rho by sigma. So, I mean, the thing that's going to matter is really just what are the eigenvalues of this operator. And the eigenvalues of this operator will be the same as this one. I think this is the definition that they use. It could be the other way around. Use the one you want, and it's not going to change the definition here. There's no reason to take one or the other. I mean, I looked at this a little while ago, and I thought this was the one that they used, but maybe I looked at some other source, so it could easily be the other one. But it really doesn't matter. Okay, so this is how we're going to define the fidelity with some notion of this thing. And so what does this mean? So, you know, another way to write this is that it's the trace of the square root of, the square root of rho times sigma times the square root of rho. Okay, so now there are no funny absolute values and everything is just completely explicit. Okay, so this is the square root of rho times the square root of sigma, and then you multiply by the adjoint of that. Well, that just takes these things in the opposite order, and since rho and sigma are Hermitian, you know, you just get the square root of sigma squared, which is just sigma, and here you get the square root of rho. Okay, so this is some formula that you could use to compute what the fidelity is. You take the operator, this is some positive semi-definite operator, so it's clear what the square root means. You just take the square roots of all of the eigenvalues and the eigenbases. You know, you multiply these operators together. This whole thing, again, is some Hermitian operator, so it has, and in fact, it's going to be positive semi-definite, and so you just take the square roots of its eigenvalues, and then you just sum them all up because you're supposed to take the trace. So in terms of, you know, a mathematical quantity that's well-defined and that you could compute, clearly this is some function of two density matrices, rho and sigma, that you could, you know, plug into a computer if you knew what the density matrices were, and you could, in principle, compute it. Okay, but why should we call this the fidelity? You know, what the heck does this have to do with the overlap? Well, one thing you can see, of course, is that, you know, one thing we definitely would like to be true would be that if we would plug in the states psi and phi, so if rho is the projector onto psi and sigma is the projector onto phi, that we would actually get the same thing. And you could check that. You could check that that's what you get. But actually something stronger is true. Which is that in general, you can think about the fidelity between rho and sigma in terms of fidelities of the purification of rho and sigma. So there's a sense in which this really generalizes the overlap, and this is what's known as Ullmann's theorem. Okay, so this kind of gives the fidelity an operational interpretation and says that it's really related to the notion of fidelity that we have for pure states. So the fidelity between states rho and sigma is simply the max over all pure states psi and phi, where psi purifies rho and phi purifies sigma of the overlap between psi and phi. So psi and phi, which have the property that psi purifies rho, so the trace over the, you know, we introduced some reference system. Let me just write the trace over R. So psi is a bipartite state now. It's a bipartite pure state of, you know, the system where rho lives and then some reference system. So the trace over the reference system of the projector onto psi is rho, and the trace over the reference system of the projector onto phi is sigma. Okay, so these are purifications of rho and sigma. Now, of course, remember the purification of a mixed quantum state is not in general unique. There's some unitary freedom on the ancilla degrees of freedom. So So we can, we can apply any unitary we like on the reference system, and that's going to, give us exactly the same purification. But then it might change the thing that we're going to be maximizing over. So we're maximizing over the overlap between psi and phi. Okay, so this says that you can think about the fidelity between rho and sigma, which we gave a formula for up there. That was just the that was what we said, the definition was going to be. It turns out that definition gives us exactly this operationally motivated quantity, which is that we maximize over purifications of the pure state fidelity. Okay, so this is what we should think of as the natural generalization to mixed quantum states of the overlap between pure states. And now this gives us some kind of a notion of a distance between quantum states that we can think of in terms of the fidelity. Okay, so I'm not going to prove this theorem here. You could think about how to prove this. I'll prove kind of an analogous characterization for the trace distance when we talk about that. But so you could think about maybe how you would prove this. Of course, you have to think about how you actually would maximize over all the possible purifications, of which there are a lot. Okay. So the next thing that I want to do is I want to mention some of the properties of fidelity, and maybe I'll just look at my notes for this just so I don't forget any of the properties that I wanted to mention. So here are some of the basic properties of fidelity. Okay, so first of all, the fidelity is between 0 and 1. So the fidelity actually is, it goes backwards from the way you would normally think about some kind of measure of a distance, right? The fidelity is small when the states are far apart. So, it's called the fidelity, right? So if states have high fidelity with each other, they should be close to each other. And the best fidelity they can have is 1. If they're the same state, then their overlap will be 1, right? So the fidelity between states rho and sigma is between 0 and 1. When is the fidelity 1? Well, the fidelity is 1 when the states are actually the same state. And I guess that's the only case. And when is the fidelity 0? Well, the fidelity is 0 if the states have orthogonal support. So that corresponds to the states being perfectly distinguishable, right? So you could have states which are even mixed quantum states, which you can distinguish from each other perfectly. And that's the case exactly when there are states that have orthogonal support. In other words, when there's a measurement that you can make that will tell you with certainty whether you have one state or the other. Okay, so the fidelity between rho and sigma is 0. So the states are, as far apart as they could be in the sense of the fidelity. This holds if and only if rho and sigma have orthogonal support. Okay, good. Something which is, obvious from this formula for the fidelity, but maybe not quite as obvious if you look at this formula for the fidelity, is that the fidelity is actually a symmetric function of rho and sigma. So it doesn't matter which state is which. This is certainly something you would like to have for some kind of a notion of the distance between two states. It's not a notion of the distance. It's not some asymmetric thing. That depends on which state you take first. It's actually a symmetric object. Now, some of these things like this, the fidelity can only be 1 when the two states are the same, and the fidelity is symmetric. These are kind of analogous to the sort of properties you would need to have for some function to be a metric. Although for a metric, normally the value of the metric would be 0 if the two states are the same. So somehow things are backwards. But even if you take, for example, 1 minus the fidelity, that's not actually a metric because it won't satisfy the triangle inequality. But that's sort of the case only for a silly reason, which is that the fidelity is not the angle between these two states, but effectively it's like the cosine of the angle between the two states. Or at least that's what it is in the case of pure states. And then in the case of mixed states, we have this maximization over purifications. So actually, if you were to take like the arc cosine so that you get the angle between the states, so this thing that you would get by just taking the arc cosine of the fidelity, that actually would be a metric. So that might be, in some sense, for some applications, it might be a more natural thing to use than actually the fidelity itself. Okay. So another thing to notice about the fidelity is that it doesn't change if we change the basis in which we write the states. If we do some unitary change of basis that just rotates things around, this is only a measure of the distance between the states. And so we're not changing how distinguishable the states are if we conjugate by some unitary operation. Okay, so f of u rho u dagger u sigma u dagger is just f of rho sigma, so for all unitaries u. Okay, so unitaries don't change the fidelity. This is this is an easy thing to verify. Well, say, I guess it's clear from here because the unitaries act, only on the, not on the reference system, but on the other part of the system, and then the unitaries will just cancel each other here, regardless of which purification you take. I guess you can also see it from the other definition if you look closely. And then a final thing to see is what happens when we consider. When we consider what happens if we act with rho and sigma, instead of acting on them with the same unitary operation, acting on them with some more general quantum operation. So suppose we take the fidelity between, so we have some quantum operation E, and we act with that on both rho and sigma. How is that going to relate to the fidelity between rho and sigma? So we want to relate that to the fidelity between rho and sigma. Well, it certainly could make the states less distinguishable. It could make the fidelity between the two states higher because, for example, there's a quantum operation that just takes some state and always replaces it with the maximally mixed state. Or more generally, we could just have some quantum operation that takes as input any state and just throws it away and gives as output any fixed state. It doesn't depend on what that input state was. And so, it could be that even though rho and sigma were maybe very distinguishable states, E of rho and E of sigma are the same state, and so the fidelity is actually one. So in general, this is the direction that things are going to go. So it will always be the case, so this is for all quantum operations, E. So regardless of what quantum operation we do, we can't make the states more distinguishable. So this should come as no surprise. I mean, you can have states which are perfectly distinguishable, and if you could take states that were not perfectly distinguishable and you could make them perfectly distinguishable, or even if you could just make them more distinguishable, you could get out more information about them than you should be able to do by measuring the original states. So, kind of from an operational point of view, something like this has to be true of anything which is really a good measure of how far apart two states are. And indeed, you can prove that this is the case for the fidelity, but I'm not going to do this here, but you could do this using probably from either of these definitions. Okay, and so these are just some examples. So there are many, many other useful properties of fidelity that I won't mention here. And you can look, for example, in the chapter on distance measures in Nielsen and Chuang, or any good book on quantum information to see some more properties of the fidelity. Okay, one other thing that I just want to mention, though, is that you can think about the fidelity as a kind of measure of, you can think about the quantum fidelity as being related to an analogous classical quantity. So this is related to the classical fidelity. So if we're given two probability distributions, P and Q, we can talk about the fidelity between those distributions, P and Q. And the fidelity between P and Q is just the sum over all the possible events in the probability space, so sum over I, the square root of pi times qi. So, this is just some way of getting a notion of the distance between two probability distributions. If those two probability distributions are the same, it will be one. If the distributions have orthogonal support, so you never get some outcome that you get with P, you never get with Q, then actually the fidelity will be zero. And, it has other kind of analogous properties to what we saw in the quantum case. And another thing that you can see, which actually gives you another way of thinking about an operational interpretation of the quantum fidelity, at least if you want to measure the distance between classical distributions in terms of this classical fidelity, is that the quantum fidelity is just the optimization of this classical fidelity over all of the possible probability distributions that could result from performing a measurement on the quantum states. So the fidelity between rho and sigma is the minimum, because remember, if we want to, if we want to think about making things, I guess maybe for this definition, maybe it's not so clear if we the right thing to think about is minimization or maximization. But for, okay, so to get the right thing, you should take the minimization. Over all POVMs, E sub I, so these would be, you know, POVMs that we could perform on these quantum states, rho or sigma. So this is the fidelity between the distributions P and Q. So where P is the distribution that you get by measuring rho with this POVM. So in other words, PI is the trace of EI times rho, and QI is the trace of EI times sigma. So this is the, you know, the smallest the fidelity could be for any POVMs that you might want to make. And, you know, I guess minimizing the fidelity, okay, right, so let's think about this. So minimizing the fidelity corresponds to trying to make things more distinguishable, right? Because if you had, you know, distributions that had orthogonal support, then they would actually have fidelity zero. So that would be kind of the best case where you could perfectly distinguish P and Q. So if we were trying to distinguish these states as well as possible, we would be trying to minimize the fidelity over all measurements that we might choose to make. Okay, good. So questions? Yes. Yeah, so this is just some function between two probability distributions. So this is for probability distributions P and Q. And this is some kind of a notion of the distance between those two probability distributions, where the distance is, you know, it's not really a distance, but it's like 1 minus a distance. It's something which is 1 if the two probability distributions are the same. So they have perfect fidelity. They're perfectly correlated with each other. And it's 0 if they're perfectly distinguishable from each other. And, you know, in between, it gives you some kind of notion of the distance between them. And you can think about the quantum fidelity, which is, you know, which is this quantity, as just the minimization of that classical fidelity over all distributions that could arise from measuring those quantum states with some POVM. Yeah, okay. Yes?
So this question might be silly. I'm just trying to question the definition of this fidelity.
Yes?
So okay. Just consider, say, so suppose I have some kind of phase, you know, some kind of state, which is the low energy state of some gap system.
Okay.
And the phase is, okay, the first of all, the question may not be even correct, but I'm just saying if I want to consider some topological phase, like the ground state can be finite number of, spanned by finite number of eigenstates.
Okay.
So in that sense, that I wonder, say, in your definition, this degenerate ground state, the eigenstates is actually, you know, all these things, and the distance between them basically is there's no overlap, so it's basically zero.
Okay.
I'm just, so this question is basically say that I wonder, say that you know, like, is there a way that one can include basically a kind of definition such that one can measure the distance between these states.
So you want to think about those states as being close to each other in some sense because they're both the ground state of system. Or
I'm saying that the question is that in this definition there are actually many of the states. The way you measure the fidelity of distance will be basically give you the inner product zero.
Okay.
That's right. Right. That's correct.
So if rho and sigma are two different, two orthogonal ground states of some system. If they're two orthogonal states, then you'll get zero, certainly.
Yeah, I think I'm just trying to see whether how well this definition can go. If this, take for example, Toriko.
Okay.
Then. You can have might have a degenerate ground states, and
right.
Whether there is a way you can measure or define the distance between the states. For this case, probably you can.
Well, I mean, as far as this measure is concerned, if you consider two orthogonal ground states, you're just going to get zero.
Yeah.
And there's a sense in which those states are very far apart from each other because if somebody prepared you one or the other of those two orthogonal ground states, you would be able to distinguish them perfectly, and so. As far as the fidelity is concerned, that corresponds to having the value be zero. So, but I'm not sure that I understand, it sounds like maybe you want to modify the definition so that it has some other property, or
But
I guess I'm not sure exactly where you're going.
Yes. Also, I guess, I think, yeah, I think you do answer the question. I think what I'm saying is that, well, there is a way that you can also, you know, measure the distance between the states of, distinct states on these topological phase, like the degenerate Brown states.
Maybe we should talk about it afterwards. I guess I'm not sure exactly.
This is not
exactly what you're. Yeah. Okay.
I do have a question about the minimization.
Yeah. Okay.
Maybe I have the wrong impression, but I sort of get the impression that in these contexts we're sort of considering the worst case, and that might be a reason to put the min, or that
right.
might be a reason to think why the minimum is reasonable there.
In this case, you should think about it, I guess, actually as the best case. So you have to kind of, you know, think about these things in the right way. I mean, I guess, you know, there's always some POVM. You know, for example, there's a POVM that on any input state always says yes. Right? That's a POVM. Like, it just doesn't produce any information. It just takes as input the state and just, you know, always gives the same outcomes. Trivial one outcome POVM. Well, regardless of what states I put in, I'm just not going to be able to distinguish them with that POVM. It's any state, and it just always gives the same answer. So here, you know, the best case would correspond to me doing like a good POVM that would distinguish the states really well. And so, you know, although there's some POVM you could put in here that would, you know, so if you have something which is not allowing you to distinguish the states, then you're going to get fidelity one. You have to kind of remember that things go a little bit backwards with fidelity. So this, you know, kind of trivial POVM would give you fidelity one, because the fidelity between those two distributions, you know, the yes distribution and the yes distribution, is just one. But if you do some other measurement which actually can distinguish the states, you know, can have some chance of distinguishing the states, the fidelity will be lower. So it's kind of the best case, I guess, in this case, that we're minimizing.
And then in comparison, the reason that there's a max over there.
Right, so I guess here we are sort of considering the worst case, because, you know, you should think about this as sort of a problem where someone is preparing the states, and then what you want to do is, like, measure them as well as possible, to distinguish them as well as possible. So if you're on the side of trying to figure out what measurement to do, you want to minimize because you want to, you know, you're the one who's trying to distinguish them as well as possible. But on the other hand, if someone else is preparing the states, you know, you have to worry about kind of the worst case, because they could try to, you know, purify the states in such a way that makes it as hard as possible for you. Does that help? Other questions? Okay, so let's move on now and talk about the trace distance. Oh, I have one more board. Okay, so another notion of the distance between two quantum states that we could take would be what's called the trace distance. And this is, if we have two quantum states, rho and sigma, well, now I'll just kind of give you the formula for it right off the bat. So this is 1/2 of the trace of the operator rho minus sigma absolute value. So again, the absolute value is just defined as it was on the top board there. So in other words, another way to think about this is you take the operator that you get by taking the difference of rho and sigma, and you just take its singular values and you sum them up. So you take the absolute values of the eigenvalues of this operator, you sum them up, and then you get, well, you divide by 2, and then you get the trace distance. Yes?
I'm not sure I'm familiar with the term singular values.
Oh, okay. So, so if you have any matrix, you can compute what are called its singular values, and these are just the non-zero eigenvalues of, that operator square root of AA dagger, right? So there's something called the singular value decomposition that says, you know, whenever you have some matrix A, you can write it as some unitary matrix times some diagonal matrix times some other unitary matrix. So, you know, when you have something like a Hermitian matrix, you can take V to be U dagger, and then this thing will always have real entries. In general, you know, if you want to have some kind of analog of diagonalization, you may have to take U and V to be different matrices. And when you have this, actually, you can ensure that the diagonal entries of this matrix D are actually all non-negative things. So if you look at the singular values of a matrix that actually has real eigenvalues, well, actually, the singular values will just be the absolute values of the eigenvalues of the original matrix.
So the number of singular values is the dimension of the support?
Yeah, that's right. There's some convention about whether you consider zero to be a singular value. In some contexts you might, but let's say we don't, then it'll just be the dimension of the support.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, so this is just the sum of the singular values, well, divided by two of this operator rho minus sigma. So, you know, I guess intuitively you should imagine that this has something to do with the distance between the two things, because clearly if rho and sigma are the same matrix, well, then this will be zero, and so, you know, we're summing up nothing, and so the distance will be zero. So this is now, like, it's going the other way. So when the two things are the same, actually the distance is zero. So that kind of justifies having the word distance in the name. And, you know, if the states are further apart from each other, then you might imagine that they're going to have a larger trace distance, and that's true in some sense. And so this quantity we can actually think of as the quantum analog of a more natural notion of distance between probability distributions. So, you know, you may not have seen this classical fidelity before, but maybe you have seen what's called the total variation distance, or if you haven't, you'll probably agree that it's a reasonable way to measure the distance between probability distributions. So this is the quantum analog of what's sometimes called the total variation distance between probability distributions, which is just the sum over all the possible outcomes, well, with this factor of a half, of pi minus qi. So this just says, look at all of the possible events that could happen. You know, take the size of the difference between the probabilities for that event to happen under the two distributions, and sum them all up, and divide by half. And the reason for that is that if you have two distributions that have orthogonal support, you want the total variation distance to be 1. And for that to be the case, you need to have this factor of a half. Otherwise, the distance would be 2 if you have two distributions that have orthogonal support. OK, so this is in some sense a quantum analog of this total variation distance. At least this formula looks, you know, somehow quite similar. We just kind of replace here quantum states with, well, we replace the probability distributions that we have here with quantum states. But, you know, rho and sigma could be diagonal in different bases. And so why, you know, is this particular way of combining the states, why is this the natural thing to give us something which we should think of as the quantum analog of the total variation distance? Yes?
So if rho and sigma are diagonal on the same basis, then does the quantum trace distance reduce to the classical?
In the eigenbasis of the operators, exactly. I mean, so if these two things are diagonal in the same basis, you know, then we should think about them as effectively classical, right? Because if we just choose to work in that basis, then, you know, the problem is really just a classical one. We just have, in that basis, we have effectively a probability distribution. And so certainly this would be, you know, then clearly the right thing to take. But it's less clearly the right thing to take if they're diagonal in different bases. Okay. So what we would like, you know, is to have some kind of an operational interpretation, again, that says there's some problem, you know, some task that we would like to carry out where the success probability of that task has something to do with this measure. And, you know, maybe in the sense that that this does. So, you know, this measure has some operational interpretation as well, which is that, you know, if you want to, someone gives you a sample from one of these probability distributions, and you want to guess which probability distribution that sample was drawn from, the probability with which you can do that is simply related to the total variation distance. And we'll see exactly how it's related in just a second when we talk about this in the quantum context. Okay, so here then is an operational interpretation for the trace distance. We can say that it has to do with the distance, so the total variation distance between probability distributions that would arise from some kind of optimization over all the POVMs that we might try to do. And so here's the theorem. So the distance, the trace distance between rho and sigma is, so now we should have the max over POVMs, because again, we have this idea that, you know, we're thinking about someone preparing the states, maybe adversarially, and then we, you know, we would like to perform a measurement to distinguish them, and we're going to perform the best measurement to distinguish them. Okay, but now a big distance means distinguishable states, whereas in the case of the fidelity, a small distance meant distinguishable states. Okay, so we maximize over POVMs of the distance between two distributions P and Q, where, again, P and Q are just the distributions that result from performing the POVM with elements EI. So again, PI is the trace of EI rho and QI is the trace of EI sigma, the probabilities that we get outcome EI when we have the state rho or sigma. Okay, so this I actually want to prove, but maybe just before I prove it, I should tell you how this quantity actually relates to the guessing probability. So, so equivalently to this statement, so the maximum guessing probability, so the probability that we can guess which state we were given, So the scenario is that someone is preparing either the state rho or the state sigma, and let's say they're doing that with equal probability. So, you know, with probability half they prepare rho, and with probability half they prepare sigma. They give us the state, and then we would like to guess guess which state was actually prepared. So the probability with which you can guess if you make the best possible P of the M is a half times 1 plus the trace distance. So up to some factor of a half, the trace distance is like the, you know, the bias away from, of course, you know, in the worst case where you had no information about which state was prepared, in which you couldn't gather any information by performing a measurement, the best you could do would be just to flip a coin. So you would get success probability a half. And so the trace distance has something to do with the bias away from a half of the best possible measurement. So how do we see that this is you know, what the bias is when the distance is d? Well, you know, suppose if the two distributions are well, say that, you know, when it's the state rho and then we do some measurement, you know, we have probability p of one outcome and then 1 minus p of the other outcome, and then when we have the other state, we have q and 1 minus q. Then what can we say? So so what is the distance between these two distributions? So the distance between P and Q, well, let me not say between P and Q because I'll just write the distance between these two distributions is, okay, so we said we were going to prepare you know, this distribution with probability half or this one with probability half. So here we have a half P minus Q. Well, I guess we have the absolute value. So because that's the distance between this and this, and here we have a half, you know, 1 minus p minus 1 minus q. Okay, but so this is just p minus q. Okay, so if we're given these two distributions, the total variation distance between them is just the magnitude of p minus q. Okay, but then what can we say about the probability that we would guess which state we were given? So the probability that we're correct is, we're given the first state with probability a half, and then we're going to be correct with probability p, because the probability that we guessed this, you know, so the best thing to do, of course, is, you know, we're going to guess this distribution. So if we get the outcome corresponding to this distribution, we're going to guess that it was the first outcome, and that happened with probability p. And so here, I guess we're going to assume that p is bigger than q without loss of generality, because we can always switch them. And then with probability a half, we're given this one, and we'll get the outcome. You know, the second outcome with probability 1 minus q. Okay, so this is just a half, 1 plus p minus q. So here we're assuming p is greater than q without loss of generality, and we could flip things around. So if p was smaller than q, we would just get this the other way. And so, you know, in general, we would just get a half, 1 plus the absolute value of p minus q. Okay, so this is sort of just an aside to see that the guessing probability is just what we get by taking a half, 1 plus the trace distance between the two distributions. Okay, so you know, if we can, I mean, here I did the calculation assuming that we were considering the distance between two classical distributions, and if we can see that actually the the trace distance between the quantum states is just the max over these POVMs, then we'll see that actually this, you know, this best guessing probability is related to the trace distance in exactly this way. Yes?
Sorry, I'm a little confused. So what are we trying to guess? Like, what are we calculating probability for?
So, you know, what we're going to see is that there's some measurement which will allow us to guess whether the state rho or the state sigma was prepared. And let's imagine that in that, you know, in that, when we perform that measurement, so, you know, there's two possibilities. We have the state rho or we have the state sigma. And suppose that the measurement that, you know, when we make that measurement to figure out whether it's rho or sigma, so this is the, you know, this is the probability that we get the outcome that's going to tell us that it's rho. So, you know, basically we're going to be performing some two outcome measurement where we have two POVM elements, E rho and E sigma. So this is the probability that we're going to get E rho, you know, given that we actually had the state rho, and this is the probability that we're going to get the wrong outcome, so E sigma, given that we had the state sigma. And here, this is the probability that we're going to get the rho outcome, you know, given that we had, sorry, I guess I did this backwards. So, sorry, these are the two outcomes for the state rho. So, you know, this is the probability of the rho outcome, this is the probability of the sigma outcome, and here, this is the probability of the rho outcome for sigma, and this is the probability of the sigma outcome for sigma. Okay, so these are the two, you know, classical distributions that we might see if we make these two measurements, given that the state is rho or given that the state was sigma. And, you know, here's the total variation distance between these two probability distributions. It's just how far apart these probabilities P and Q are. And the probability that we, you know, that we could guess correctly which state we have, I mean, the right thing to do, you know, if P is bigger than Q, is to guess, well, if we have, you know, and basically what we want to guess is that if we get the outcome, the E rho outcome, then we should guess the state is rho, and if we get the E sigma outcome, we should guess the state is sigma, right? So this is just the probability that we're correct. So with probability half, we got the rho outcome. Sorry, with probability half, the state rho was prepared, and then the probability that we guessed correctly was P. And with probability half, the sigma state was prepared, and then the probability that we guessed correctly is 1 minus Q. So this is just the probability that we're correct, you know, using the, like, the law of conditional probability, right? And so this is a half 1 plus P minus Q.
And it's correct to say that before the measurement, our state of the system is rho over 2 plus sigma over 2? I don't know which.
No, I mean, the state, well, I guess that's maybe the best. I mean, if all we know is that someone was preparing the state rho or the sigma or sigma according to this distribution, then, yeah, that's the density matrix you would describe. But if you think that, you know, they actually did prepare one state or the other, then, you know, you should imagine that the state is either rho or the state is sigma and, you know, use those to calculate the measurement probabilities. I mean, of course, you wouldn't get a difference between the statistics you would see if you would just say the state was always a half rho plus sigma. Okay. Good. So, so I was just trying to sort of show here that the probability that you actually guess the state correctly is something which is related in a simple way to the trace distance between the states. Okay. So this is the trace distance between the states. And so now what we want to see is that actually this is true. So that the you know, the distance between the states is really given by this maximization of over POVMs of the total variation distance between these two distributions. Okay. All right, so let's prove this. So, you know, we have to optimize over all POVMs. So what we're going to do is we're going to show, you know, suppose we take some arbitrary POVM, and then we're going to see that this expression is going to be, you know, that really the best we could do would be to get the distance between rho and sigma according to this definition. So we'll see that that's the best we can do. And then we'll see that there's actually a choice of a measurement that achieves that. It'll actually be kind of clear what that measurement should be in the course of the proof. Okay, so let's imagine that we choose a POVM. So consider an arbitrary POVM with elements EI. Now it's kind of clear that actually, you know, in the best measurement you should take a two outcome POVM because, you know, you want to have one outcome that you use to guess that the state was rho, and another outcome to guess that the state was sigma. And, you know, in general, if you had more outcomes and you used some of them to guess that the state was rho and some other ones to guess that the state was sigma, you could always just lump them together so that you really had just a two outcome measurement. So you lump together the rho ones and call that operator E rho, lump together the other ones and call those E sigma. But for now, we'll just imagine that there are any possible number of elements, and it won't actually make the proof any harder. And so, you know, we don't have to necessarily assume at this point that it's just a two outcome measurement. Okay. So now we're going to say, you know, let's let pi be, you know, as we defined it before. So this is just the probability that we get the ei outcome when the state is rho, and qi is the probability that we get the ei outcome when the state is sigma. Okay. So now what we want to do is we want to just compute the distance, so the total variation distance, between the probability distributions p and q. Okay, so what is this? So this is just a half times, I mean, here we're just using the definition of the total variation distance. It's a half of the sum over I of pi minus qi. So that's the magnitude of the trace of ei times rho minus sigma, just using the linearity of the trace, right? It's the magnitude of pi minus qi. So that's just the magnitude of this minus this. Well, that's just this quantity. Okay, so now what I'm going to do is I'm going to say, well, let's actually assume something about the form of rho and sigma, or rather, you know, introduce some notation for how we're going to write this. So let's let rho minus sigma be, I used p and q, I hope this isn't confusing. Maybe I'll actually change it on the fly. So let's write this as r minus s, where R and S are both positive semi-definite operators. So with R and S, both positive semi-definite. Right, so there's a unique way to do this because, you know, okay, so rho is a positive semi-definite operator, sigma is a positive semi-definite operator. So if I take their difference, of course, I don't in general have a positive semi-definite operator. I mean, it'll certainly have real eigenvalues, but it'll have some positive eigenvalues and some negative eigenvalues. So what I do is I just collect together all of the positive eigenvalues and I put them in R, and I collect together all the negative eigenvalues and I put them in S. And so this is just, you know, I just take the, you know, the positive part of the spectrum, put it in R, take the negative part of the spectrum and put it in S. Okay. So now, what can I say in terms of this? Well, rho minus sigma is just R minus S, but R and S have these properties that I didn't have before. So this is a half the sum over I, the trace of EI times R minus S. Okay, good. So now what I can do is I can think about, I could use the linearity of the trace to imagine again that this is just the trace of EI times R minus the trace of EI times S. But now notice that since R and S, maybe it would be helpful if I just wrote that. So this is a half sum over I, the trace of EI R minus the trace of EI times S. Okay, but notice that, you know, R and S are positive semi-definite operators, right? So the trace of EI times R is certainly positive, right? So if I take the trace of the product of two positive semi-definite matrices, I'll always get something positive. So this is a positive number, and this is a negative number. But certainly here, you know, at this point I could use the triangle inequality and I could say this is at most the sum of this and this. So this is at most a half the sum over I of the trace of EI times R plus the trace of EI times S. Okay. But now because these quantities are individually positive, I actually don't need these absolute value signs. So this is a half the sum over I, the trace of EI times R plus S. Okay. But now I can do the sum over I, right? So what do I get if I do the sum over I? So what's the sum over I of EI? Do you remember? It's just the identity, right? Because this thing is a POVM. So this is a half of the trace of R plus S. Okay. And now, what is R plus S? Well, R plus S is nothing but, you know, is nothing but the absolute value of R minus S, right? Because R contains the whole positive part of the matrix, and S contains the whole negative part of the matrix. So this is the same thing as a half the trace of the magnitude of R minus S, but R minus S is just rho minus sigma. So this is a half trace of rho minus sigma. Right? So that shows you that this is actually the trace distance between rho and sigma, the way we originally defined it. Okay? So we had an inequality along the way. We had this less than or equal sign. And so we showed that, no matter what measurement we would make, the distance would be, at least this for that particular measurement. So the distance between the distributions P and Q arising from any particular measurement that we might make is at most the trace distance between rho and sigma. So the other thing we might like to see, the other thing we need to see in order to prove the theorem is that you can actually achieve this, so that there is some measurement which will actually allow you to distinguish rho and sigma with these probabilities. So can you see what measurement you should make? Or are there questions about this part of the proof first?
Just a small question. How did you go from R plus S to R minus S on the bottom?
From here to here?
Yeah.
Yeah, so here what I'm doing is I'm taking the absolute value of the operator, and what this corresponds to is, if you happen to have some matrix that has all real eigenvalues, then you just replace you keep the positive eigenvalues as you are, and you replace the negative eigenvalues with their absolute values, right? So here I have this matrix which has some, so R and S both have positive eigenvalues and they have orthogonal support, right? Because I just take the eigenvectors with positive eigenvalues, I put them in R. I take the eigenvectors with negative eigenvalues and I put them in S, right? So when I take the absolute value of this operator, I just get R plus S. Is that okay? Other questions? Okay, so the last thing we would like to see is that actually you can achieve this, so that there's some measurement that does at least this well. So we want to see that there's some, we want to see that there's some measurement which, if we were given states rho and sigma, would allow us to guess whether we were given rho or sigma with probability equal to this, with probability equal to a half times 1 plus the trace distance between the states. So what measurement should we make? How should we tell which state we have? We want to come up with some POVM. And I've kind of argued already that, we might as well just think about some two-outcome POVM. Think about one outcome that corresponds to guessing that the state is rho, and another outcome that corresponds to guessing that the state is sigma. So how can we come up with these operators? Can you guess what we should do on the basis of what we've seen so far? Yes. Right, okay, so you're kind of thinking geometrically about what the best measurement should be. So if we thought about these two vectors as pointing in some direction, if we think, say we think on the Bloch sphere picture where orthogonal vectors correspond to vectors that point in opposite directions, then, by some kind of symmetry argument, you would think that maybe this would be, so here we have some state psi and some state phi. So by a symmetry argument, you would think that maybe these would be the directions that we should project onto, because if we, if we sort of go one way or the other, we're favoring one state over the other. But if we make sure that this angle is the same as this angle, then you might think that projecting onto either this direction or this direction would be the best thing to do, and you would be absolutely right. So this is what the optimal measurement is. But of course, this only makes sense in the case of pure states. So we want to know what the measurement that we should do in general should be. Now, in this case, it was a projective measurement. We just projected onto this direction or this direction. And it turns out that actually the same is true in general. So you can always have this measurement be a projective measurement. Well, maybe I'll just tell you what it is. Maybe it's a little bit hard to guess, just from staring at the stuff that we've done here, kind of quickly. So what you should do is you should project onto either the support of R or the support of S. And you should guess that you have the state rho if you project onto the support of R, and you should guess the state sigma otherwise. In other words, if you project onto the square root of S. I mean, if you know, if you're in the, if you're, I mean, there's no chance of getting something that's in the, that's not in the support of one or the other. You have to be in the support of, you know, the joint support of rho and sigma. Okay, so so this is what we should do. So here's the optimal measurement, and it's called sometimes the Hellstrom measurement. So project onto support of R or S. So in other words, let's do the POVM, which has two outcomes, you know, E rho and E sigma, where E rho is the projector onto the support of R. And well, I guess we could just say E sigma is the identity minus pi R. And then it, then the thing really is a POVM, because of course they obviously sum up to the identity. And you know, if there's something that's not in the support of either of them, it's not going to happen anyway, so it doesn't matter that we include it over here. Okay, so this is the optimal measurement. So let's see that that's actually the case. So what we should do is we should compute the compute the trace distance between the states, and compute the distance between the distributions that we get if we make either if we make the measurement that's going to give us either this outcome or this outcome, and see that what we get is actually the same. Okay, so first of all, the distance between rho and sigma, the trace distance between rho and sigma, you know, actually we can see it over here. It's just, you know, a half the trace of R plus S. So if we just kind of work backwards, you know, these were all equalities. So this is a half the trace of R plus S. Okay, so let's just see that we get the same thing if we compute the trace distance between the two distributions. Okay, so the so now we're going to let, you know, P and Q be the distributions that correspond to making this particular measurement when that the state is either rho or sigma. So what's the distance between P and Q? Okay, so there's this factor of a half. And then we have to take, well, the magnitude of the difference between the probabilities for the outcome. So here we have the trace of so, you know, if we do E rho, that's the projector onto the support of R times, okay, so the state is rho, but I guess I want to write this as, I want to write this, I mean, I'm going to have the difference between the probabilities. Okay, maybe I better not try to just skip ahead. So, so we have this minus the trace of pi R sigma plus the trace of, you know, now, I minus pi r, I minus pi r rho minus the trace of I minus pi r sigma. So now I'm just using the definition. Okay, but here, you know, I can use the linearity of the trace. Here I have rho minus sigma, and rho minus sigma is just r minus s, right? So this is a half the absolute value of the trace of pi r times r minus s. Gotta watch the brackets here. Plus the trace of, so here I have I minus pi r times r minus s. Okay. Sorry for all the brackets. Okay, so now what is this? So what do I get if I take pi r times times r minus s? What do I get if I take the trace of just pi r times r? I just get the trace of r, right? Because this thing projects onto the space where r lives, but it doesn't do anything because, you know, r lives entirely inside the space that r lives in. And on the other hand, you know, these spaces are orthogonal to each other, right? Because, you know, I put all the positive eigenvalues in here and all the negative eigenvalues in here. And so, you know, they correspond to distinct eigenvectors. And so so they're actually, you know, they actually have orthogonal support. Okay, good. So the first term is just a half. The first term is just the trace of R. So I guess I have the absolute value of that. And the second term is just the trace of S, because this is the projector onto the, you know, the orthogonal piece, so that's only going to give me S. Now there's this minus sign, but I have this absolute value. Oh, I was missing one of the absolute value bars. Okay, so this is plus the trace of s. Okay, but r and s are positive operators, so this is just a half the trace of r plus s. Okay, so that's the whole proof. Okay, so now now we saw that, first of all, you know, it's not possible to do any better than the distance between rho and sigma, which is just this expression, half the trace of r plus s in terms of these operators r and s that we introduced. And over here, we saw that actually we could achieve that by making the Hellstrom measurement. Okay? So this says that the, you know, this trace distance, which we introduced in terms of this kind of maybe ad hoc looking expression, it actually has this operational interpretation, which is that it's the biggest total variation distance between the distributions that you get if you make the best possible measurement to distinguish the distributions. Where does the time go? Okay, so I guess we went a little bit over time, so I guess we should stop here. Maybe I'll just quickly mention some of these properties of the trace distance, because they're kind of analogous to these properties of the fidelity that we saw before, and I'll just at least write them up quickly and maybe not discuss them as much so that we see them. So first of all, this is something which is between 0 and 1, and it's going to be 0 if and only if the states are the same. And it's going to be, again, 1 if and only if they have orthogonal support. So these are properties that are shared with the fidelity, except that 0 and 1 are flipped. It's, again, symmetric. So the distance between rho and sigma is the distance between sigma and rho. And this thing actually is a metric because it satisfies a triangle inequality. So the distance between rho and tau is at most the distance between rho and sigma plus the distance between sigma and tau. So the trace distance is actually a metric. It's again invariant under unitary operations. So the distance between u rho u dagger and u sigma u dagger is exactly equal to the distance between rho and sigma. And it satisfies monotonicity under quantum operations as well. So you can't make states more distinguishable by processing them. So in this case, this says that the distance between E of rho and E of sigma for any quantum operation E should be no more than the distance between rho and sigma initially. So you can't increase distinguishability by processing them. Okay, maybe the last thing I'll do is just mention one other thing about the relationship between the fidelity and the trace distance. So, in general, they measure the distance between states in slightly different ways. So there's not some one-to-one correspondence between them. I mean, they truly are different measures, and one may be better than the other for particular applications. But they do have some relationship between them. So this is a theorem that says that if I take 1 minus the fidelity in order to swap 0 and 1, well, this is always less than or equal to the trace distance between rho and sigma. And on the other hand, I have an upper bound, which is at most the square root of 1 minus the fidelity squared. Okay, so there's some kind of continuity that says, you know, certainly if the fidelity is very close to 1, then the trace distance will be very close to 0. And if the fidelity is very close to 0, the trace distance will be very close to 1. In between, they'll measure things slightly differently, but you'll always have these inequalities being satisfied. Okay, so sorry to go a bit over. I guess we'll stop there, and we'll talk about entropy and data compression